Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hello, everybody. This is another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I'm Chad Wesley Smith, joined as always by Machiavellian Max Montana.
How are you guys doing?
And our special guest today, and what I'm sure has been a long-awaited episode. Let's just call it the Starting Strength episode.
Hey.
Our special guest today, Jordan Feigenbaum.
Right. Not to be confused with Mark Ripito, but I am, in fact, Jordan Feigenbaum. Thanks for having me, guys.
Today's episode is brought to you by Hip Drives and High Fives. And I very excited to my first interaction ever with Jordan was telling him that he was weak on the internet in a starting strength fight. And I was like, oh, what are all these starting strength guys? And you guys can squat as much as me put together. There was like four of them. I figured it was, halfway accurate. And then it turns out the one strong guy who does starting strength was in the conversation. And so just a quick bio for Jordan, before I'll let him talk about himself, but he is the owner of Barbell Medicine. Conveniently right there on the shirt. And as well as the proprietor of one of the internet's finest websites, thatsnotheavy.com.
I have to give credit where credit is due. There's a guy in LA who actually had this idea to put that on the internet. So if you go to thatsnotheavy.com and press play, you'll be delighted. It's a good way to troll people on the internet. If you just tell them, go to this website. If they send you a video, so you just put that as a link, that works.
You have to do like a Google URL, though, so they don't know that that's what they're getting.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That's all I do for my online coaching.
When I'm critiquing people, I just send the link. There you go.
They send a squat video and you say, send them to that link. That works.
That's the seventh time Max got me with thatsnotheavy.com.
Yeah. If you look back to Chad and I's first interaction, it was something about squatting and bending over or whatever. And then, he's like, I squat more than everyone here. And I was like, no, man, I squat some weight. And he's like, no one cares about you, which is objectively true. Subjectively, objectively true.
Well, besides, and we'll get into what Barbell Medicine is, but besides, the hours, months, years it must have taken for just the coding of thatsnotheavy.com, what's a little bit of your lifting and education experience?
Sure. So I'll start education-wise first. I got an undergrad bachelor's degree in biology in 2008. I got a master's in anatomy and physiology from St. Louis University School of Medicine. That was 2010. And then I earned my medical degree from Eastern Virginia Medical School. It was 2016, went to residency at UCLA, then now moved up to Santa Cruz. Basically, I'm trying to infiltrate the CrossFit ranks. That's why I'm at ground zero.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's how it works. Lifting-wise, less impressive, if you're a big academic guy. But, so I think my best total is 1795, is a 198. 640 squat, 430 bench, 725 deadlift. And, I'm still chasing former glory. I feel like ever since that total, I've been like, it's time to break that. The 2,000-pound total would be – it's a 10-time body weight total, which would be dope.
Is that 198 in not the USAPL or when the USAPL used to have 198s?
So it's not the USAPL. My best total in the USAPL, I think, 1707 or some odd communist number. I did a meet where they were using pound plates, because we're in America. And, so that's how I got to 1795. Otherwise, it would be like 1794.6.
Yeah.
You have to put that on the internet.
Well,
link in bio. That's the.
Well, then, so besides the lifting, your main business is Barbell Medicine. So tell us what that is.
Sure. So when I used to coach a lot of people while I was still getting my master's degree before I went off to medical school, and then went into medical school, it seemed to me that there was a need to kind of integrate allopathic medicine and lifestyle change as it pertains to strength and conditioning and nutritional changes, other lifestyle changes. And I felt like everybody was out there in the medical community was talking about exercise, and that just meant walk more. That's like typically what they say. And I felt I'd been involved as a coach and in the strength and conditioning world for so long at that time that what better person to bring those two together than me. So it started off as a small consulting company. We were working with both gyms who had a bunch of trainers who wanted to get educated, and then also individuals who wanted programming or nutrition kind of work. And now we're doing seminars. We're also literally writing the article for other doctors on strength training and health. So this is, goes on a website called Up to Date. It's the doctor's Google. They effectively, if you go in their office, they're going to look up on Up to Date whatever it is you're there for to kind of get a, you know, some info about.
It's like WebMD.
It's basically WebMD, yeah, but you know, the one step up. But the, yeah, they contacted us. We had a guy go through the Starting Strength seminar who is like the senior editor there, and he contacted us and was like, hey, do you want to write the article for strength and health outcomes? And we're like, yeah. And then we made the outline, and it's, you know, a 10-page outline of just all the points. And we're like, oh, crap, now we got to write this thing. So it's almost done. Our first draft will be submitted next week. And then the idea with Barbell Medicine, though, is to, you know, I tell people ask, you know, what's the 5-year goal for Barbell Medicine? And the idea is to get just go lift weights more to be the next, just go walk. You know, like, I don't want that to be replaced. And I just want every practitioner to feel comfortable with saying, you need to train more. And because I think we've all seen it be very effective. You know, you guys work with a lot of high end athletes, but you've also trained, you know, people who want to get stronger, get healthier, and you've seen the benefit.
Surprisingly, a lot of people don't come to me for
well, it, you know, it's just a very powerful tool that I feel like is not being used as much. And just a quick, like, you know, for the internet, because this will go on the internet, you know, less than 6% of all primary care physicians are actually recommending resistance training to their patients, and that's actually in the American College of Sports Medicine's recommendations for activity guidelines for adults in America. So it's like, we're supposed to be recommending it, but people just aren't. And when you ask them why, they say, I don't have enough time, I haven't done it myself, I'm not comfortable recommending it, I have no idea where to refer them. And I'm like, that's fine, I'll do it. Barbell Medicine will do it. So
we need more docs who lift.
Yeah, right.
That's funny, because as a coach, not a doctor, I do recommend a lot of medical advice to my clients, mostly about, you know, life-threatening diseases and things like that. Right. I feel like I'm qualified because
Max is very well versed on rarediseases.org.
Rare diseases. That's not rare.
It's that's not rare to call. Yeah,
it's your next website.
It's a website. It's at my homepage. So.
Well, that's interesting you say that. So, you know, I get like Facebook messages from coaches who I don't know, but who know me and are like, hey, I've got this client with a super rare like disease, you know, and they see this very high end specialist at an academic center, you know, and they're saying they can't train. What do you think? I'm like,
fives.
You probably should do fives. Well, most of the time, there are only a handful of conditions that would preclude somebody from actually training. So most of the time, I think that off the cuff, like, you can't lift is probably incorrect. However, some of these diseases are super, super rare and have like a whole like spectrum of how severe they could be. And so for me to just say, hey, I don't know you, I don't know this patient, I don't know anything about them, to say, yeah, it's fine, would be irresponsible. But that's what the – and then the next response is, oh, well, where can I go read more about this? And I'm like, there is not something I can send you to read that's going to like give you the okay to say, yeah, you can train. Because if it's not okay to train, you know, you might have skipped over that part, you know, where they talk about resistance training, you know, in the book. So – yeah, that's been a really interesting thing, but again, I think just getting this information out, it's going to help everybody involved.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very important work. Definitely, kind of bridging that gap between the medical world, the training world. You know, we're fortunate to be around people like Dr. Quinn Hennock doing that between the physical therapy world and actual training. So, you know, they're not just telling them stop squatting, stop deadlifting because your knees hurt, your back hurts. Yeah. I would say I think you're doing that on even a bigger scale.
Yeah, it's interesting because it just stop lifting or just take a break, or can't you just, you know, not train for a little bit? You know, I feel like that does more harm than good. And the relative risk of resistance training in general is so low compared to any medication I could potentially prescribe, any other lifestyle change I could potentially, you know, recommend, that I feel it's almost medical malpractice to say, you know, just stop, or you can never lift anything above 20 pounds. It's like, where does that even come from? You know, we in America now, we're always
Tracy Anderson, I think.
You're right. Yeah.
You're a medical doctor, right?
Tracy Anderson.
So you have pledged the Hippocratic Oath.
Right.
Is that right? So can you technically couldn't prescribe bad training to somebody right? Because that's like, that's going to be like potentially against the,
it's not ethical.
It's not ethical for you to do that. So all of your training programs have to be good.
Yeah.
So I've had to get rid of all my bad training programs, you know.
Well, and speaking, and speaking of bad training programs, when we come back from the break, that's in the podcast business, we call that a segue.
Ah.
Yes. When we come back from the break, we're going to take a little strength history minute. When we come back, we're going to yell at each other about starting strength. Odie Wilson was one of the most talented and massive strength athletes of his era. Finding body sizes that range anywhere from 6'5 to 6'7, weighing likely somewhere between 400 and 440 pounds, Wilson is said to have 42-inch quads while wearing size 23 shoes and wearing a size 26 ring. Most ring charts that I found while researching this only go up to a size 13. So basically, Odie had a 5-pack of bratwursts on each of his hands. He was the 1988 IPF World Champion in powerlifting with a 454.2-kilo 1,002-pound squat, 257-kilo bench press, and 397.5-kilo 876-pound deadlift for an 1102.2 2430 total. That was in the older single-ply equipment and was the world record at the time. He also took second in the 1990 World Strongest Man, losing a 5.5-point lead on the final event, which was a 200-meter race with a 100-kilo weight on his back. And he lost that to John Paul Sigmarsson. Not exactly a World Strongest Man type of event, necessarily. He also worked as a bodyguard for Michael Jackson and appeared in the 1988 film Cyborg alongside Jean-Claude Van Damme. All right, so we are back from our Strength History Minute. Again, here with Jordan Feigenbaum of Barbell Medicine. And in addition to Barbell Medicine, Jordan is he's kind of high up in the starting strength hierarchy.
I sit on the right hand of the Ripito.
So is that, are you the Holy Spirit or?
I think I'm Jesus.
Okay.
He was a Jew. And then also, you know, a lot of people didn't like him. So I feel like.
The similarities are.
Yeah, they really end there.
You have a beard too.
I also have a beard. I am not a carpenter, however.
Huh.
Yeah. I buy a lot of wine. Yeah. Okay.
Better than nothing.
Yeah.
All right. So. As avid fans of the Jug Life podcast, as you are, because that's the only kind that we have, you know that among our favorite topics, you know, when we're not making fun of multiply high squats or providing exemplary information about how to become strong, we enjoy a few jabs at the starting strength community. And I think, yeah, Jordan and I have talked about this kind of stuff before, but I want you to... tell us how we're wrong. What are some of the misconceptions that the uninitiated have?
Well, okay. I mean, so I think, you know, the easiest way to do would be like, what are the general assumptions about starting strength that people make?
Nonsensical squatting technique.
Well, so I think what a lot of it is, you see people who are not coached. They haven't been coached. They've read the book, quote unquote, which, as you know, think of all the things you've written over time.
For sure.
And people say, oh, I read your article and here's what I got from it. And you're like, did you read the same article? Did you read all of it? Like, did you read most of it even? You know, and so people will come in and they'll be doing a good morning squat and they'll be, you know, really way bent over and there's effectively no forward knee travel to use the quads or whatever. And they're like, and then you see it and you're like, oh no, this ugly, you know, and you call it a Ripito squat because you're so pissed you have to fix this again.
I had a crew come into a seminar in Long Island once, like four people wearing starting strength sweatshirts.
Oh, good.
All together. And they all did that.
They all did that. Yeah.
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 And they had a sweatshirt, so it seemed pretty official.
Sure, right. Because if you're wearing a sweatshirt.
Yeah, it wasn't a t-shirt. It's not cheap.
The only organization that would have a sweatshirt would be Starting Strength, I feel like. Was it like a gray cutoff right here at the forearm?
No.
Neck cut out?
No. But it was gray. We had that part right.
Okay.
But I think it was a kind of like a gray body with a different colored sleeve.
Oh, the Letterman. We call that the Letterman.
Right. So that squat is not actually what we teach in our seminar, for instance. And so invariably, you'll have two different types of people show up at the seminar. One, who have read all the books, never been coached, though, and they're like way bent over. Their knees don't translate forward at all on the way down. And we're like, push your knees forward. You're going to be more upright than you think. That's like one. And that's if they've read the book and they've, you know, feel like they've trained a little bit themselves, that's what they end up like, unless they're really athletic or you just pick this up naturally. The other type of people have been squatting either high bar for a long period of time or front squats, for instance, and they won't bend over. And you're like, well, if you're going to do a low bar squat, you're going to bend over a little bit more than if the bar's high on your back or if you're doing a front squat. But at the same time, we don't want you to good morning your squats, and we don't want your hips to come up first out of the bottom.
I think that's definitely it. I mean, something that I would even think is being cued when
When you hear hip drive and you see the meme.
And you see the videos of him having his hand on the low back and telling him to push their hips up.
Yeah, and I think some of that, your little sound bites on the internet too, and you say, well, look, it's all hips. They want everything in their hips. They don't want any knee translation forward. But, we would like vehemently disagree with the West Side squat model where you're back, vertical shin.
Take it, right.
And, we're like, no, you want your knees to go forward so you can use your quads. Your quads are super strong. They ultimately have a ton of motor units stacked up per inch. That's why they're way stronger than your posterior chain could be. Why wouldn't you use them? That'd be silly to not. But I think, again, if everyone is being held as to the critical standard that RIP is, where, hey, have you ever given somebody a cue that may be taken out of context? I think it's passable. I think perhaps the hip drive cue has been overdone on the internet by people who have, fanboys or whatever, who have read the book, seen a video, but not necessarily coached a large swath of people. So I rarely will cue just the hips when I'm coaching a squat, unless they're just actively lifting the chest out of the hole and that's messing with their mechanics. And ultimately, I feel like we all want the same thing. If you want a high bar squat or a low bar squat, you want the barbell to move in a straight vertical line over the middle of the foot. You want repeatable, consistent mechanics, and we all want that.
The back and legs together.
Yeah, exactly. And so if you can get that without, cueing hips or knees or chest, well, that you're just going to do what you have to do to make the mechanics work. So I think that's like probably the biggest misconception. And there was a guy on Reddit who was basically was like, well, Feigenbaum's not even that strong. Like, he squatted 640, but it was in wraps, and the wraps basically made up for his back angle bending over. And I was like, I mean, yeah, it was over 3 times body weight, but that's cool.
The wraps don't tend to really affect the back much.
Yeah.
I've noticed when I'm squatting in wraps with very strong legs, I need like two belts. Let me wear two belts. That would be better.
So then I squatted 600 in knee sleeves, right? And he's like, yeah, well, you're still bent over a lot. I'm like, well, I mean, the bar's pretty low, and I don't really have a super long torso, and also I pulled 725. So anyway, just get off my jock. But his thing was, he's like, I fixed so many rip and toe squats. I'm like, well, me too. If you're going to call the uncoached, misunderstood version of the squat the rip and toe squat, I mean.
In the misunderstanding, though, I mean, if there's the books out there, Starting Strength and practical programming stuff, I mean, I've read Starting Strength. It's probably been a good dozen or so years. Sure. But if it's being so commonly misunderstood, like, shouldn't that be getting addressed on a broader scale?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's definitely articles and videos about, like, hey, here's what you're probably doing wrong. So there's that. And then the other thing is, think about the sample size, right? So Starting Strength is probably the biggest selling strength training book on Amazon. It is, certainly. And I have a rough estimate of how many copies are being sold per year. And then you think about the general intelligence of, like,
the world.
Right. And then also the squat chapter, I think it's like 180 pages or something like that. And so you get through that once and you feel like, I got it.
Yeah.
Nay. You're gonna have to go back through it again, again. It's like you watch Westworld, right? You watch it once and you're like, oh, it's cool. And you watch the second time, you're like, whoa, I missed so many things. The third time, you're like, why do I miss so many things again? How is that possible?
I've never watched Westworld, but I feel like Arrested Development is like that.
Yeah,
too.
Right.
The jokes, they run deep.
It's the same. In fact, I compare Westworld to Arrested Development on a daily basis.
There's so many subtleties.
But I think that's an issue with just trying to coach remotely in general. I mean, you guys, I mean, how many, your clients are all online, right? And how many times have you thought to yourself, well, if I just had them in front of me, I could fix this in 30 seconds. But in reality, and you spend a bunch of emails and, and other videos trying to correct the same thing or whatever. And I don't know. So I think misunderstanding is almost par for the course when you don't have your hands on somebody.
I guess, I mean, I could see it like the knees out cue for Kelly Surrett. Like, you chose this one picture of Diane Fu squatting in a way that no one strong has ever
squat. You're right.
But that's the picture you chose, so that's the one that everyone sees.
Sure.
At least in that particular case, I feel like he's really dug in on that cue. And I'm not sure if I can speak one way or the other, because I'm just not a purveyor of a lot of rip and toe content to know if he's sort of done the same on that. But
yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think I would obviously admit like my certain bias being involved on this side. So, you know, it'd be very difficult to say, well, I'm free from bias. You know, I mean, I stand to gain if Starting Strength does very well, you know, and I think Rip's been great to me so far. So I feel like I owe him in a way. So that's me like publicly like admit, you know, saying, hey, this is my bias. Okay. But at the same time, I don't think it would be fair to characterize Rip Squad as like all hips, you know, good morning, you know, just use your back to lever the bar up, because that's not necessarily what we want.
And they put their hands on the bar in a weird manner.
Well,
for the elbows.
Wait, so you're talking about the false grip, the thumbless grip?
Yeah, but it's not even the thumb. The people I see do it at seminars, it's like it's a handless grip.
Sure. So they're
on the crook of my wrist.
Right. It's like an orangutan sort of thing. Like they're up like this, and that's wrong. So I actually wrote the article, The Grip Problem, discussing this exact thing. Like that's not where the grip should be. We want the hand as far sunk down on the bar as possible, ideally with a neutral wrist. If you cannot maintain a neutral wrist, then you're going to wrap your thumb around.
Just run some like Facebook ads for these articles, or something. Because,
but again, think about consuming.
I wouldn't have to fix these.
Sure.
Problems anymore.
Well, think about this, all right? So the average person who probably comes into your gym after having read Starting Strength, bought the second edition 10 years ago, didn't really read it, has not kept current with all the new material, right? And then you look at their squat and you're like, oh my gosh, this is trash. Ripito is trolling me again, you know? But I don't know if that's fair to – that's just like if I see a guy who comes in and he's super upright and, you know, his heels are coming off and he's like, yeah, I read Max's squat article and I've been squatting every day and this is what I do. And I'm like, oh, Max, again, why do you do this?
He sends me coaching links all the time to this website, and this makes me feel like shit all the time.
All right, well, let's move on then to our next issue, and this will be more of – Max can handle this one more, but it's Mark Ripito, the weightlifting coach. Low bar squats.
This is something that I feel like it was like a it died for a minute. Like there was Mark talked a lot about the low bar squat as a better means to train for weightlifting. You know, makes you stronger because you train with more weight. The mimics the first pull, et cetera, et cetera. And I'd seen that argument a lot, and then that kind of died. But actually, recently I've seen it come back, where there's been – I saw Steffi Cohen mention that, you know, doing low bar squats to make your weightlifting better. And it seems like
she
that's
that? –
yeah.
She blocked me on Instagram.
Well –
she does a lot of weightlifting meets.
Oh, does she?
Yeah.
Signs up for
she signed up for a bunch of weightlifting meets.
She blocked – so she used a Starting Strength like picture on her
– it wasn't a picture. No, she actually said it in a post. Someone sent it to me that, you know, she does – she was saying, you know – because it's general, it's not a specific exercise, you might as well just do the one that allows you to lift the most weight because that'll have the greatest impact, which is a huge stretch. So
For a barbell-based sport.
Sure.
Where you could train specifically.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Interesting to me where Rip stands in that, and like that's the – it seems odd because he has very little experience as a weightlifting coach.
Right.
Or with weightlifting.
Yeah, so I do not know the entirety of his weightlifting coaching history. I know that Wichita Falls Athletic Club did host the Midwestern University's weightlifting team. Penley was there at the time. And I know a handful of lifters who have come out from that. Okay. So I do know, though, at the seminars, for instance, when Rip talks about this, and usually somebody will ask, like, you know, him about USAW.
Yeah.
All right. And then he's like – he'll say something like, well, look, if you squat 800 or 600, if you have a strong squat, I don't care if you do it high bar or low bar. You've gotten strong. Right. However, if you're weak and your high bar squat is not going up, you know, routinely, and you're not strong, maybe you should try low bar. That would be his moderate stance. And I think a few drinks in, maybe that changes for everyone. You know, you have to draw your line in the sand. And I do think that may be a more moderate approach than what it had previously been.
Yeah, it definitely sounds more moderate because, yeah.
Probably a more nuanced thing.
Possibly, yeah. I think
what about the deadlift? Do you think that weightlifters should – because he would argue vehemently that they should pull heavy sets of five, for instance.
So that's something that's actually
– what's that?
Five.
That's one of those things that's been – that's always been interesting because I think there's – within the spectrum of weightlifting and all coaching and all the systems around the world – there's all sorts of different successful versions of it, right? And because weightlifting is a little bit less critical in the sense of like you can – as long as people are very powerful and you have training that develops the right qualities, you can have really varied forms of technique and varied systems within that that develop these lifters. The drug issue probably plays a big role in that too.
Sure.
It used to be that nobody, you know, in especially in UCW, but nobody did heavy pulls. Nobody did any kind of heavy deadlifting. And more recently, you know, and there's probably, I'm sure Ripito would back it up, but more recently we saw a lot of the European guys come over, Klokovs and these guys, and talk about doing heavy deadlifting. I do think the volumes, like the really heavy fives, are probably done much, much less often. And as the qualification goes up,
the timing
is really far.
The timing of them relative to the competitive season.
Sure. Right.
Yeah. So in a more developmental block versus
way far from competition.
Sure. Yeah.
But I would think that it's hard to say where I wouldn't agree with it as much, like with the in Mark's sense, where he was probably talking more about like what he would say, I think would go more into like the LSU kind of program. So if you guys know what Kendrick Ferris and those guys were doing, where they would do
Kyle down there
tens and fives, really heavy pulling and stuff. It's just not as productive because, you know, like you said, it's like you can't do it that often.
Sure.
You can't do it that much. It's going to be early in developmental cycle where it's basically just GPP at that point.
Sure.
By the time they're actually lifting these heavy weights, you know, it's the transference is lower.
Yeah. The counter argument would be, well, if that's your developmental, it's like you're developing your strength base.
Sure. Yeah.
As how much will the technique decay during that time?
Sure.
Yeah. How far can you get away from it?
Right. And it, the counter would be, well, if you're still doing some exposure to lift.
In my sense, like that argument with Rip is actually not like a big issue to me because a lot
Max
of what he's talking
said
about.
He agreed.
Is, well, because he's talking mostly about being strong.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah,
which
you have
is
to be
like, I get
to be,
it. Like that's your method of how you're gonna develop strength in lifters.
Strength is never a weakness.
Yeah. But in a sense of like the technical side of it, which I think was the bigger issue for people, where he's talking about the low bar squatting and the changing the technique a lot to mimic,
right? The first pull, the snatch recovery.
Yeah, where
although the snatch recovery does use hip drive.
It depends.
So Delega's got like this 205 squat or snatch rather in like the back of this training room.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's some like, you know, mole of a coach sitting over. I think he looks like he's sleeping.
Zygmunt.
Yeah.
He became the U.S. coach.
Right, right. No, I got it. But I think he was sleeping at the time, you know.
Probably.
Right. So, and then Delega squats 205. At that time would have been a world record. Snatches 205.
Yeah.
And this monster hip drive, you know, coming out of the deal. And so, and we show that at the seminar saying, you know, on some heavy snatches in the recovery, there is certainly hip drive, and you could make an argument to suggest that using hip drive and using this sort of
but that's kind of
it's
the bar is going backwards. If you're going to lose it behind you, you lift your ass up
to counterbalance forward. Sure.
It's in that regard, it's more probably more that it's like that's the equivalent of like reverse band deadlifting, where it's like you're going to make something kind of strong or lift this weight, like you don't need to practice that position.
Sure.
It's just so unlikely. Someone like – you might have one rare guy like Delega who just can't stand with a snatch, but the likelihood of having somebody not strong enough to
just get up their snatch.
You know, it's,
sure.
It's more just shifting their hips higher so they can, you know, remove their legs from the equation and kind of lever themselves into position.
Sure.
Or they're off balance.
So the specificity would be – You feel like that's not a good argument to use the low bar squat.
It's kind of like, I mean, I wouldn't say it's necessary because you have to think about the training volume you have. You only have so much work you can do.
Sure.
Doing low bar squats in place of what you could do something that would be more beneficial globally or even to a more specific issue.
Sure.
Obviously, if you have a guy who's like, if you have a lifter, I'm saying, who's stuck in the snatch in that position, probably take him out back and shoot him because
maybe not a weightlifter.
Yeah, he's just not going to do much anywhere else. Yeah, you're getting stuck in the snatch. You're kind of
right.
Yeah.
You're a powerlifter, bro.
Yeah,
come join us.
Put knee wraps on like Feigenbaum. Put another 200 pounds on your squat, and you're good.
Right. Between the beard, the knee wraps, the you know,
48 hour weigh in.
You just mailed it in.
How much did you weigh?
300? I weighed in at 196.
Who was helping you? Who was spotting you?
Yeah, exactly.
Was it Raw with Dad?
There was not even a scale in the gym, so it was a Lillibridge meet.
Fake weights.
Fake weights, fake news, the whole thing.
The meet didn't even happen.
Castleberry and the head judge. Sure.
Yeah, Castleberry was in my weight class. He was also 198 that day.
Yeah, he benched 650, but, you know, it was for a triple. So.
How many people did we just offend?
One.
Not enough.
There's one kid right now watching this in tears like, what?
He just trolled everyone.
What?
So yeah, I think so for instance, Mary Peck, she's one of our, and she squats low bar. Also, Annie Thor's daughter just published at the end of like this 10-minute find a max squat, squatted 140 kilos, low bar. It was funny because I was at Rip's house, right? And somebody had tagged me in the comment section. And I showed Rip and I put on my Instagram story and he goes, just a perfect starting strength squat.
Mary.
And I tagged, Annie Thor's daughter.
Oh.
And I tagged Annie, hoping to slide in the DMs.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, Mary is a fantastic weightlifter and very talented, but I think the argument can be made, and I've heard it made by such physical therapist professionals as the Dr. Quinn, that her lengthy list of hip injuries, he thinks, is being exacerbated by the different angles created in the low bar squat and the more deeper flexion in the hip. But
it's possible.
My counter, my counter would be, well, there's a lot of squat, snatching, and front, clean recoveries that are also, and that's dynamically loaded compared to the squat, which is more controlled. But in any event, I don't know. I think a lot of this Rip stuff is misunderstood, So I think if you guys actually, and I hate to speak for him, right? Because he's going to call me up and say, Feigenbaum. Yeah. Feigenbaum, why'd you go on this podcast, talk about what I have to say about fives and hip drive, he's gonna say that, and I'd be like, well, Rip, I was just there, and I wanted to clear this stuff up. So for the internet, I'm clearing this stuff up. I think that you guys probably, your method of getting weightlifters ready to go to a meet, in addition to getting their technique on point, would be getting them strong. You agree with that?
Yeah.
And so how your method is different, but I don't know if there's too much different, there's probably another coach somewhere else in the world said, you don't need to get stronger. Your technique needs to get better. I don't know.
There's people like that for sure. There's people that don't, they're going to have, I get the variation, right? We all have our own approach to the strategy, right? I think what is sort of funky is that there's these little tidbits that sort of linger, where it's one thing if Rip's got a thing or Chad's got a thing where it's like, hey, here's what I think is this way to do it. That gets kind of spread as like a whatever. It's an idea. People discuss it. We move on from that.
Sure.
It's that those nuggets, there's a couple of those nuggets in there that just sort of stay forever, it seems like. And that, the technique low bar thing is like this argument, when it's odd to me that if it's so much more effective, we would have discovered. Like, the Chinese have done it. Like, the Chinese probably bought the low... Like, Chinese bought starting strength, did it all for 10 years with 200 people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they did everything and tried everything. Right, they all died.
I remember at that Klokov, Ilya Polovnikov seminar, doing these little videos with Vasily Polovnikov, in which I asked him about low bar squatting for weightlifting and using bands. And the low bar squatting one, he didn't understand what I meant at first. So then I showed him. I was like, not the bar here, but here and here.
Yeah.
And he just looked at me. He's like, why?
Right.
Why?
But all of their people squat, 300 kilos plus. You know? So I think Rip's argument would be, look, if we're having issues developing strength in somebody, we can use more weight on the low bar, and perhaps that would allow them to manifest more force production in other lifts.
Yeah, and I guess some of
it's hard. You have to run this double blind, randomized. Yeah. Oh, I can't feel the bar in the low bar position.
And I think a lot of that gets to a bigger issue of that Max has talked a lot about in regards to the squat and its role in weightlifting. Is it to lift more weight, or is it to make your legs stronger?
Right, specifically as they apply to the clean and jerk and the snatch.
Because in American lifters, it is not he who has the biggest squat who lifts the most weight.
No.
It's kind of like a big squat is great if it's a byproduct, to great training, not if it is the goal of great training. The goal is the goal of powerlifting, but weightlifters who have big squats, there are times where raising the numbers in the squat is the focus, but there are times when it needs to not be the focus because just how much you can squat isn't, a big squat a great weightlifter does not make.
Yeah, I think in elite weightlifting, you sort of get, a lot of this gets
conflated to, because you have, I mean, you're at high level genetics and they great coaching.
A lot of variables.
Yeah, and all the selection bias has already occurred, and you're like, you see these things, and it's hard to make a lot of sense of that. On the other hand, you have these recreational weightlifters who are like, I want to go to a meet and I really just want to snatch 100 and clean and jerk 140. And you're like, yeah, but you only squat 140.
Right.
And you keep trying to train their high bar squat, and for whatever reason, it's not consistent, productive, whatever. And you're like,
maybe it could be a low bar
to drive your, because then if you got this guy low bar.
Yeah, and general strength is going to be a fast, the same idea in throwing. This is why America struggles in like the hammer throw, because the quickest way to throw the hammer pretty far is to get really strong really fast.
Sure.
But it actually inhibits in their long-term development, because they've lost some of these movement qualities and speed qualities by, you know,
spending all this extra time getting strong versus actually throwing the hammer.
Yeah, and the technical development. Yeah. But we could go on and on and much more lengthy discussion about this. So let's take another quick break, in which we are going to take a minute to get to know Mr. Max Montana Ada. In case that people seem confused, they think that Montana is a nickname. It's actually his middle name, as well as where he's from.
If I was going to do a different sport other than lifting, what would I want to do? That's a hard one. I would, you know, I don't. Do I have to be good at it? I guess not. Like, because I'm probably not a very good athlete at the other stuff. The first time I ran in front of my wife, she turned around. We had to run to a bus stop. So I was running behind her to catch a bus stop. She turned around and looked at me, and she told me later she felt bad watching me run. She felt like noticeably distraught, seeing that she had put somebody in a place that they had to do that with their body in public. A sport I would pick would probably be something that's totally different, like, I don't know, some kind of like field sport or something. I mean,
Korfball
or something really popular. Orienteering, korfball, handball. I don't know other.
Team handball or basketball
handball? Hi-alai sounds cool, because you got basically a weapon and a ball, and that sounds like it'd be cool. Anything, I think that if I was, you know, if I was going to do a different sport, I would pick a sport that allowed me to associate with a different type of person, like really rich people, like Miami Vice kind of people. Like, you know, you go in and you walk in and you have like a blazer rolled up. Don Johnson's waiting for you to play your next match. Racquetball, maybe. That would be fucking cool.
Buying tickets to sports and events can be complicated. There's a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, in which is a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I actually just use SeatGeek to buy tickets when we're in Ireland to go see the Ireland versus Fiji rugby game. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals, and it gets you the most bang for your buck. SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats to fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, Jug Life listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. So just download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code JUGLIFE. That's promo code JUGLIFE for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
All right, so we are back from getting to know the Montana madman Max Ada. And so what I want to talk to Jordan about now, obviously a well-read, intelligent, well-trained young man, are what are some of your resources that you look to learn about, you know, things that make you better at lifting things?
Lifting things. That's interesting. So I do read a lot of your guys' stuff. Yeah, obviously.
Thank you.
Thanks for all the gains, guys. I do stay subscribed to journals, which, you know, the stuff that comes out of there isn't
terribly practical for like strength athletes, you know, because it's like, oh, 20 untrained college students, you know, gained 20 kilos on their bench press if they benched regularly. And we're like, duh. Yeah. But, you know, also I read a lot of Zordos stuff and Dr. Jake Wilson, his stuff, and RTS, whatever Mike and those guys put out. Yeah, it's been interesting. I don't know. You know, have you read Mass?
This is Greg Knuckles. I've seen two of them. There's maybe he just came out with like the fourth one mm-hmm. this past week.
Yeah, I, you know, dabble in that. But at the same time, I'm also keeping up with, you know, the medical stuff, and that stuff all just gets auto sent to my email. I have it's called Journal Watch. So any keyword that I tag like basically pops in. So basically I have an inbox full of creatine articles. No. it's all I want to know, and then testosterone in the other one. But yeah, that's usually those are the things I usually look to for training related stuff. You know, at this level, I mean, think about you've already read Zetsiorsky. You've already read Yesurin stuff. You've already read Bondarchuk stuff.
Well, you read it. Everyone says they've read it.
That's true. That's just like reading Starting Strength. Yeah, yeah, but you can go back to it and you can still learn new stuff. Like the science and practice of strength conditioning from Zetsiorsky is, I think, is great.
It's a very dense text.
Yeah, and so when you say you've read it, I quit, and then you're like, what do I read next? It's like, if you've actually finished it and you get it, you'll know what's next.
Yeah, that one, yeah, never really clicked for me. All the super training,
all the Bondarchuk
stuff.
Yeah,
didn't really click for me until Max's former roommate James Smith, the thinker.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, he worked for me for about a year, and I got to see him put this stuff into practice. And at that point, I was like, "Oh, so it's the simplest, most intuitive answer written in the most convoluted language possible."
Right, right. Well, you can say in 7 words. Let's say in 700, yeah. And then you still and not give no examples at the end. You know.
Yeah, I was like, Dr. Mike. I'm not actually really sure what happened in this project, but he was supposed to be translating a Shekho book. They had a translator to go from Russian to English, and then Mike was going to go from English to human.
Ah, right. I see. Do you like Shekho stuff?
You know, we had him for the seminar, and it just seemed like very, you know, basic sports science.
I trained with him.
I did remote coaching with him several years ago now. I liked it. I mean, it's like a weightlifting. I mean, it's all taken from Medvedev's, you know, his basically like his system of weightlifting turned into powerlifting. I mean,
so you're doing a bunch of frequency and volume and very specific stuff. Yeah. Oh, that's weird. It works.
Yeah, strange.
Oh, weird. You wouldn't like just change exercises all the time and like wave up intensities to non-sport specific things and like.
We would do once we got into the Circumax phases, then we would do bands and chains and boxes.
They did some
not squatting to depth.
They did some ones. They did some tens. So you could pretty much
average
out to fives.
That's what I heard, that you just do fives, but. Well, you know, that's interesting. So on our podcast this last week, we were talking about, you know, if your 5RM is going up, you can reasonably ascertain that you're getting stronger. However, how that translates to a 1RM, you don't really know, especially if you're not practicing singles a lot, you know, because it's a skill in and of itself to take all the strength that you've developed and display it in a true, you know, shit 1RM. So if you're not regularly practicing your sport, yeah, you may get some decay in your actual sports performance, but if it's a GPP block, maybe you don't care about that, yeah, you know, sure, at the time. So,
what is next for Barbell Medicine? Projects, products, anything coming up?
Yeah, so you know, we're slanging supplements. Still not doing Lincoln Bio because I still have my soul.
He actually has his coupon code is written under.
Yeah, yeah. What you can't
under his shirt, he's gonna take.
I'm gonna take
it.
I'm gonna
Jordan 27, and it's a 3% discount.
But no, we're expanding. So Alan Thrall, he got his starting strength coaching credential, yeah. And so he wanted to do some remote coaching. So he's working with us. Austin Baraki, he's another doc, and he's working with us as well. And yeah, so we're expanding a little bit, trying to get the message out. We've got seminars, so we're going to Sacramento. We were gonna go to your gym down in.
Yeah, you can come and hang out in my garage.
Yeah, so now we're coming to your garage. What you don't know is 30 people are descending upon your garage. But yeah, so the Barbell Medicine seminars are going up. So they're on our website, barbellmedicine.com. And we send a newsletter out every week. So you can go sign up for that at our website. I do a lot of trivia. That's my favorite part of the newsletter, is like five things you don't know.
Five things you don't know.
Well, right. I thought you would appreciate that. So just for while you're here, what animals besides humans can get sunburnt?
I was about to say giraffes, but I know it's, I saw giraffes in summer because their tongue can't be sunburned.
Right.
That's why it's black.
Right.
Pigs.
Yes. That's one. There's three.
Oh, there's three.
That's really good. I'm impressed. How did you guess that?
From Colin and Courtney's pig. I looked at it and I was like, that thing could be sunburned.
Yeah. I just thought they turned to bacon.
Can't get sunburned.
That's extra sunburn. That's
is it whales?
It is not whales. So hippopotami can get sunburned, and also freshly sheared sheep.
Okay, that makes sense.
And
speaking of hippopotami, or triggered by a hippopotami, do you know what a group of moose is called?
It's not a school.
Nope.
It's not like a bully.
Nope.
Okay.
So there's a herd is one of the names, which is lame.
Yeah, right.
A fangle.
What?
Yes. And it's weird that, you know, a gaggle of geese, it should be a fangle of meese.
Yeah.
But
I like what you did there.
Moose are really dangerous.
Max,
no. Montana, when you get near it,
what was your pet moose's name in Montana?
It's extremely dangerous. This is a public.
Obviously, bull eagle.
Anyone that doesn't know how dangerous a moose is, clearly don't venture into the wilderness of Montana alone.
I still can't believe you're from Montana.
Yeah.
I don't believe you.
I actually live in a log cabin.
I did.
And you just squat 30 times a week?
That was after we moved into the city. I was a city folk then.
he was homebroken. All right, so that was the one, and then I'll give you a second one, and then we can.
I'm just glad I nailed my.
Yeah, no, you crushed it. What is the largest tire manufacturer in the entire world? Who makes the most tire? You don't need to sign up. Neither of you need to sign up for a newsletter because you're too smart. That's impressive. How did you know that?
I have an 11-year-old.
If you have kids, maybe you knew that. Yeah, they make like 370 million tires per year.
In the world.
Yeah, Michelin only makes like 170 mil.
Yeah.
So we're talking about number of tires.
Right. Not like absolute, but they use more rubber.
Huh. That seems inefficient.
Joe's Huge Ass Tires also manufactures large. You can find them on North 7th, Bozeman Avenue, if you're interested.
It's funny. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm just doing shirtless Instagram lives on the daily. Jordan_barbellmedicine. I make my breakfast in the morning, and I don't put a shirt on. Do you wear a shirt in your own house?
From time to time.
Never.
What's your pants situation like, though?
Well, nobody's ever seen my belly button on Instagram. No. So, like, you don't need to know.
That's where you draw the line.
Yeah, that's where I draw the line. Yeah. Yeah, that's where I draw the line. Like, you can't see that. So, yeah. But that's what I do. I do the Instagram lives daily while I'm making breakfast, and people always troll me. But it's just dudes. There's no chicks there.
There's a lot of dudes on there.
Yeah.
They're just getting angry at your naked body.
Right. Like,
your big pecs are just pissing me off, buddy.
Your body hair is not natty.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, I know it's Jewish.
If I was in that room with you, I'd be so close to your face right now, you could taste my lips. Just kill you off. Put your shirt back on. Stop being so sweaty and muscular.
People say, put your shirt back on. Yeah, people say, put your... And I was like, it's my own house.
Put your shirt on.
They're my own eggs. They're like, aren't you afraid the hair's going to get in your eggs? I'm like, no, I hope it does extra protein.
where can they find you?
Yep. So barbellmedicine.com is our website. We put out articles there regularly. Also, you sign up for our newsletter. Jordan_barbellmedicine is where you can find me on Instagram. That's probably where I'm most active on the internets.
You guys got a podcast now too?
Barbell Medicine Podcast. It's
creative
on
creative name. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we wanted to do Barbell Medicine 5, but it was already already taken. So you can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and the tubes. We have a YouTube channel.
All right. Yeah. Well, speaking of podcasts,
here's the best one. Yeah.
If you enjoy the Jug Life podcast, please go over to iTunes, give us a 5-star review, write us something nice and or funny. We always appreciate that. It helps more people find the podcast, like Fit Life of Cam, who told us, one of the most informative, helpful, and entertaining fitness-related podcasts out there. I listen to every podcast during work and then watch the YouTube video later just to look into those baby blues. Kidding. Kind of. I take notes. I'm a beginner powerlifter and trying to learn how to do my own programming since I can't afford a coach. Each episode helps me get more knowledge as how to do this. Thank you. No, thank you, Fit Life of Cam. If you send me an email, chad@jtsstrength.com, I'll send you a t-shirt or something. Beyond that, make sure to check out the events section of store.jtsstrength.com for any upcoming seminars, powerlifting or weightlifting with me and Max. Visit juggernautcoaching.com for our powerlifting, weightlifting, and super total coaching. And subscribe to the YouTube. We're always proud of the content we put up here. Yeah, powerlifting, weightlifting, all kind of nonsensical Rocky montages and anything else. So, Max, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram, Max_Ada, or on Facebook. If you have any questions or inquiries about the Juggernaut Online Coaching, email me, max@jtsstrength.com.
And I'm Chad Wesley Smith, at Chad Wesley Smith and at Juggernaut Training on Facebook and Instagram, filling up your news feed all day. Thank you to Dr. Feigenbaum for joining us today, for putting up with our blasphemous assaults on starting strength. But hopefully, you know, maybe one person is going to be like, oh, yeah, I'll
push my knees forward.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. All right. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.